Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, hello, Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Nicholas Barnes here from Vitel. No, stop. Don't skip this bit. I've recorded a new message for you. Because, due to popular demand, I've made a little change to the code I wrote that lets you record your Dumpty Dum. You now have the choice of hearing the theme tune in your ear at normal speed or 25% slower if you don't want to be hurried along. Are you sitting there without a clue what I'm talking about? That's easy. Just dial 0203 031 3105 right now and have a go at recording your very own Dumpty Dum by choosing option 2. That's 0203 031 3105. What's that? You don't want to record a Dumpty Dum, but you do want to leave a message? No, that's even easier. As well as the email and SpeakPipe that Royfield and Lucille mentioned countless times, we've got two more choices for you as well. As before, you can call 0203 031 3105 and choose option 1 to leave a message. You already know that. But, and this is the new bit, you can now text the show too. Simply send a text message starting with DUM, that's D-U-M, to 07786 200690. That's 07786 200690. And make sure you start your text with the word DUM. Oh, and don't forget to put your name on it too. It's a normal number and texts are charged at your standard network rate, just like texting anybody else. Now, I've only set this up for 3 months to see how it goes. If it's used, then I'll keep it going. If not, well, nothing lost. So that's it. Leave a message by dialing 0203 031 3105 and choosing option 1. Sing, play, hum, drum, or whatever a Dumpty Dum by calling 0203 031 3105 and choosing option 2. Or text a message by sending DUM followed by your message to 07786 200690. Have fun.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
Hi.
Hello, everybody. We're still admitting more people. So, hello and welcome to Dumpty Dum. Is this our fourth Zoom? Depending on the old man pleasuring himself, it could be our fourth Dumpty Dum on Zoom. Third. We have got, there's a whole load of you. And, of course, we have our quiz. But you haven't all logged on a Friday when you should be with your loved ones. You haven't logged on for that. You've logged on to speak to Charlotte Martin, who plays our Susan Carter. And definitely a character which we all love to hate, but stress on the love. She's a social climber. But I think when we look at our Susan, we see elements of ourselves. We see vulnerability. We see aspiration. And we see somebody who loves her family. Charlotte,
mm-hmm.
When did you join the cast of The Archers?
Oh, my goodness. I hate getting asked this question simply because it makes me feel really, really old. But I actually joined the cast in 1982.
Wow.
So I was very young. And Susan was, I wasn't really sure whether she would be in the program for a long time because I auditioned actually for two other parts. Mm-hmm. Prior to getting Susan, and both of those characters were no longer in the program. They were only in for a short while, so I actually drew the good straw, really, in terms of not getting those parts. But she came into the program as this kind of vulnerable young woman from a really rough family in the village, and as I say, I didn't know whether it would be a long-term character or what, but it's turned out to be very long-term.
But before you came in, the Horribins weren't actually there, were they? I think they were like the Grundys. They, as soon as they came in, you had to pretend like they'd always been there. They weren't new to the village, but they were new to the microphone.
Yeah, I mean, Susan was the only Horribin to have spoken. Mm-hmm. They were just talked about. I think, you know, the writers thought, well, in a village, we're going to have people from every social strata. And because I think if a lot of the listeners have been listening, you know, you lot out there who've been listening for a long time know that very often the characters in the program, especially in the early days, seem to be kind of middle or upper class. If you listen to some of the old recordings now, it seems very much that way. And a lot of the lower social class characters didn't speak, or if they did, they were elderly old men talking about farming and the countryside and so forth. So I think it was quite a revelation, really, to have somebody from a family like the Horribins introduced.
Now, I learned something this week, and it kind of came out from something which I said to Lucy on the show last week or the week before, that I've listened to quite a few old episodes of The Archers. I had I was invited down to the BBC studios in Ealing, this was years ago now, to go and just have a look at the archive. And the person there said, here you go, here's a recording of The Archers from 1952. And it was on a lovely bit of acetate. And doing Dumpty Dum, I've gone back and I've listened to a lot of old episodes. Some of them don't stand up to the, you know, the passage of time. Yeah. They really don't. So, and I said, and I kind of realized, for me, there's a change from the mid-70s up until like the early 80s, where it becomes listenable with modern ears. Mm-hmm. But you and Clara from the Academic Archers pointed something out to me. What was that? Can you remember?
It was the introduction of female writers into the mix. Because I think it was up until the 70s, sorry, I think it was 72 or 71, something like that, all the writers on the team had been male. And in the 70s, women writers suddenly became part of the team. And I think the storylines changed quite dramatically from that point on. I think there was a different spin on things. And I think whilst there was a tiny bit of a move away from a focus on farming and farmers and male storylines with women in the background, suddenly women were pushed into the foreground, and some women's issues and women's lives in the country were reflected to a greater degree than they had been before. And I think that made a massive difference to the programme.
It absolutely has, in terms of just, you listen back to those old recordings, and it is literally a case of, what are you doing over there? I'm just like doing a bit of hay baling. Are you? Yes, I am. Whatever. But so you kind of helped to herald this change, and didn't you, your character?
Yeah.
But you talk about the way that people sounded, because I went back to an old recording, I don't know if it's like 1984, but, and you were speaking to Eddie, and he owed you a fiver or 20 quid, which is an obscene amount of money back then. whatever it was, and you were not happy.
Yeah.
And he was dodging Susan. And I thought to myself, that's not Susan. That your diction has so changed in the time you've been playing Susan.
I think It's like any character. If Susan had just been in for 4 or 5 episodes, there isn't time to really develop the character as such. And I think all of us, if you listen to a lot of characters, I mean, I listened to one of the archive episodes the other day and heard some of the actors and thought, gosh, they've changed as well. We've melded into the characters and made them our own, I think. So we've really lifted them off the page. And I think that happens when someone is in a soap, if you want to call it a soap, over a long period of time, you grow into it.
There is the voice thing, but I think also something which you put your finger on when we were just chatting earlier, and it's the social class thing. You sounded posher.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I first came into the program, they my instructions were, she's a country girl, so we need a country accent. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I went into it doing kind of a full-blown country accent. And actually, over time, realised that, you know, where Ambridge is bordering a little bit on Birmingham, a little bit on Worcestershire, you know, that kind of mix. And so kind of I've adapted her and shaped her a little more than just being this country girl that was introduced for how many episodes. So I hope that kind of helps you understand why those changes might happen. And I think it happens for all of them, for all of the characters.
I think there's also another reason, and it's that the direction changed, but also it became much more acceptable to have real regional voices. There always were your Jethros and there was that very country yokel sound, but to have and I suppose it probably even started with the introduction of the Grundy family, because they're just like the Horribins. They kind of came from nowhere but were always in the village.
No, that's absolutely true. I think there was a move away, and you can see it across all radio and all BBC productions, really. That, you know, we've gone from very RP, very, very middle class accents in broadcasting generally to an introduction and an acceptance of the wider range of people and individuals that are out there. And I think it's a good thing. Absolutely a good thing.
Absolutely. Do you want to know a secret?
Mm-hmm.
It's only us here.
Go on then.
Right. Whenever I speak to an actor and the Archers, all right, apart from the fact that I always get giddy, right, because I'm just a big fanboy, right, if you get mentioned, what do you think they always say about you?
Gossipy, interfering, miserable, a hater voice, Susan. Yeah, basically, it's a lot of not hate, but it's, you know, they're very. I think this is very critical of Susan.
No. What do you think your fellow actors say about Charlotte, Dr. Charlotte Martin?
Oh my God, I don't know. I hate to think. I think what a lot of them might say is that they don't know how I've done what I've done in terms of doing my acting and going out and going off and doing my PhD and whatever. I think a lot of them were shocked and, you know, surprised that I'd gone to do that, because, you know, most actors are just, you know, we want to be actors and we just do that. But I suppose they were quite surprised at that. But I also think they probably think that I'm quite shy. Because I am quite a shy person, actually, which is interesting. And I think a lot of actors are shy, to be honest, which is why they go into acting in the first place. But I like to be quite professional. I like to go into studio and know what I'm doing and be clear about stuff. So I'm kind of very much there to go and do the job. So I'll get in and do it. You know, whereas, you know, no, I won't mention any names, but, you know, some actors in some programs are kind of a bit more laid back and a bit more chilled about it. But I think they probably say, you know, she comes in, does a job and goes out again.
Those things are all undoubtedly true, but that's not what I was going for. They always say you are the most glamorous.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Member of the cast. And everybody always remarks about your lippy. And then look at you today.
I lipstick, if I was on a desert island and I could only take one thing with me, it would be some lipstick. That's incredibly vain. I even wear it on the radio. So there we go.
Oh, wow. Is that method acting?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But no, I you know, that would be quite kind. I mean, one of the reactions I get from a lot of people when they find out I'm in the Archers, they say, "Oh my God, you're not Susan. You're nothing like her. Completely nothing like her." And then I think, well, yeah, but I'm an actor. So, you know, that's good. That's good.
I must admit, I was hoping that you'd come in a tabard today.
Do you? I've come in dungarees today instead.
Good yokel farmer wear. Yeah. We need to kind of reprise ourselves of some of your greatest hits, so to speak. And you married Neil.
Yep.
And at one point, you know, he was a bit of a catch, wasn't he? Because, you know, he did date Shula for a bit.
Yeah, he did. You know?
But you ended up with Neil. But this terrible family of yours, family of ne'er-do-wells, got you into right bother in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. So why don't you reprise us of that storyline?
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so Susan met Neil. Susan was working in the pub as a barmaid. Met Neil. They went off to London for a weekend and she got pregnant and they ended up getting married, which was, I think, you know, it all happened fairly quickly. But, you know, they are happy and they were happy and they continue to be so. And I think actually they're one of the strongest marriages, I think, in Ambridge, to be honest. But yeah, so had this marriage, blah, blah, blah. My family, my brothers particularly, got me into quite a difficult situation in the 90s because Clive, who's the baddest of the Horribins, he held up the village shop and was sent to prison. And then, I mean, you all know this, but I'll carry on with it. He escaped from prison. And of course he came to Susan. And Susan was in this real dilemma of, you know, she'll tell the police, blah, blah, blah. But then her family loyalty kicked in and she ended up harbouring him, dyeing his hair for him so he could go on the run. And then, of course, he was captured. And then Susan was sent to prison for a short while because she'd harboured a criminal. So that was a really difficult time. It was a really exciting time for me as an actor because the storyline was great. Everyone involved in it, the actors and the writing was superb. So it was a great opportunity for me, really, as an actor. So I love that. That was really one of the highlights, I think, for me of being in the programme up to the present day, really. The media absolutely loved it. It was mentioned in the House of Commons. I was on the front page of the Times. I mean, it was crazy. I was invited even to go on to Kilroy. Do all of you remember Kilroy that used to be on the television? They wanted me to go on Kilroy, and I can't believe they asked me to do this, to go and talk about women in prison. And I refused to go on because I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm an actor playing this role. I cannot, for the life of me, see how my experience of playing someone in prison and going to sit with women who've actually experienced this on television. So I declined that. But yeah, the media interest was absolutely crazy.
I think in hindsight, maybe your story was the first of the true kind of issue-based / media sensations. You know, obviously there's the Robin Helen storyline, but you got there some 30 years beforehand, really.
Yeah, I did, yeah. And I think it's interesting because, you know, there was a lot of, and, you know, the Helen storyline was fantastic. And the actors involved in that were superb. But I think a lot of people forgot exactly what you said, you know, that actually this big issue, this dilemma of women being sent to prison unnecessarily and their experiences was way, way before that. And I think it was, I think you're right. I think that was probably the start of the real social issue dimension of the programme.
But you being away meant that Neil almost strayed, didn't he?
He did almost, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that was a good, That was a great dimension of that storyline was when Susan was in prison, they had a friend called Maureen or Mo, mm-hmm. And she started to look after Neil and bring him food and, you know, just look after him while his wife was away. Mm-hmm. And thought there was more in it than there was, and I think she tried to kiss him or something, and of course Neil, being lovely Neil, decided that that was not what he wanted and declined her offer. But yeah, that was a great dimension, I think, which I'm sure, you know, I mean, Neil is a lovely character, quite vulnerable, and I think, you know, needs a woman around him. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, when Susan wasn't there, you know, was kind of prey to any woman who fancied life with a pig farmer.
I think you're slightly doing him down, because he didn't falter, did he? He wasn't even really tempted. He was just a little bit naive. He didn't realise what her advances were all about.
No, he didn't. He's very naive. And I think, you know, I think Neil is a naive character in lots of ways. Mm-hmm. But he's also got this lovely softness and kindness about him, which the listeners and I love. I mean, I think it's a great character. And Brian Hewlett, who plays Neil, is one of the loveliest actors I've ever worked with. He's superb. So I'm very lucky to work with him.
How do you think your relationship with your on-air husband has maybe changed over the, what, 35 years that you've been a couple?
Yeah. Well, I think when they first got together, Susan was very young, and of course she got pregnant, and Neil was very solid. I think she thought he was a very solid, reliable, and he was a very solid and reliable person, and did the right thing and looked after her. And I think she, you know, coming from the Horobin family where there was a lot of chaos when she was growing up, there was a lot of uncertainty about, you know, money coming in and not, and the family not being able to pay bills and all this. And I think she came from that background, and suddenly she was with solid, steady Neil. So it was a real haven for her coming from that background. But I think over the years, we've kind of flipped a bit now. I think Susan's gained a lot of strength from Neil over the years and has become the person that she's become. And I think what Neil's done for her is allowed her to see her potential, which perhaps she didn't do before. And, you know, potential to do anything, you know, the world's her oyster, as they say.
One of the things, just before we go on to our first little break and do the first bit of our quiz, one of the things which I've become really aware of with the character of Susan is the amount of comedy, the amount of humour. I don't know, because I first started listening to The Archers when I was 14, and probably there was a whole load of humour. I always thought that, goodness, Nelson's dad, whose name I'm utterly just blanking on just for a moment.
Walter Gabriel,
of course, because it's Nelson Gabriel. That he was a jokey character, right? Mm-hmm. You never took him seriously. And then the whole Noel Coward element, you know, to his son. That was comedic. And you had this massive difference in kind of purported class that Walter Gabriel was utterly a man of the earth. And then there was Nelson with his antique shop and sounding like Noel Coward and talking like that. But I don't really remember, as a 14-year-old, comedy with the Horobins or the Grundys per se. When did all that start coming in? When did you realise that you had some comic chops and actually you did have timing?
It's an interesting question, actually, because it kind of sneaked up on me a bit, really. I think one of the writers at some point picked up on it and started to just introduce a little bit more lightness to Susan. I think it was probably after her children were born, because I think up to that moment, Susan was going to be a mother, and she was, you know, had young children, and she had all the issues when Christopher was born with his hair lip and all. So there were lots of serious things going on, and then she had the prison stuff. And I think after that, I don't know, I mean, this is just in my head, but I'm just wondering whether the script writers probably, when they have the discussions about the development of characters, whether they thought, actually, okay, we've had Susan in this guise, we've had her doing, you know, being representing the social issues of women and being a mother and whatever, and that perhaps, you know, what do we do with her now? Because I think that's a problem for characters and writers in soaps and you know, ongoing dramas, is, you know, how do you develop your characters? Where do you move them to? Because you can't have a character just simply trailing along in the same way forever and ever and ever. You have to shape them and develop them in lots of ways. And to be absolutely honest, I cannot remember when the first comedy stuff kicked in. But I obviously did something that the writers thought, oh, okay, she can do this. This is good. Mm-hmm. And it's grown and grown and grown. And I honestly absolutely adore the comedy. I just love it. I mean, you can play around with it so much. It's great. And whilst I still love the drama stuff and, you know, look forward to a dramatic storyline at some point, the comedy stuff is great. And one of the things that I think about Susan is that there's no one else like her in the village, which is great. So she kind of has a bit of a free rein in what she can do and say. So, yeah, I love the comedy. But, yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. I must think about that some more when we go off air. I'll have a think about when that actually happened.
Good, good. Which is an opportune time for us to go on to our quiz, everybody. Now, Doc, you feel free to play along with this as well. First right. off, it's going to be our picture round. So I can see everybody there's taking a sip of water. Looks like, wait a minute, Sir Bear, you've got something a little bit stronger than just water. Is that a whole glass full of whiskey? No, you're shaking your head. Yeah, it's not whiskey. Okay, right. So first off, it's the now infamous Dumpty Dum picture round, right? So bear with me whilst I share my screen, everybody. Right, so quite simply, this is a thing or a person in Ambridge, right? I think this one's pretty easy. If you don't get this, you need shooting. You need taking out to a field and be put down with an old cow or something. This one's easy, right? So what do you see there? What is this archer's thing or person? That's pitch around number one. What is this? This is either a person or a thing in Ambridge. So you got to understand what are we looking at here? What's that top left, then bottom left, and then what is that over on the right hand side? What is that? All right, that's an archer's thing or a person. This one's easy peasy, Japanesey too. All right, if you know your Sesame Street, you're going Royfield. Come on now. You know, don't insult my intelligence. This is very easy. If you don't know your Sesame Street, it's maybe a little bit harder. All right, so this is either an archer's place, thing, or person. Okie dokie. All right, so we're moving swiftly on. All right, and of course, this whole show is in honor of our favorite tabard wearing gossip. Right, so question number one. Which of Susan's children is her favourite? Number one, the burly blacksmith Chris. Number two, the mini... whoever put that mark on, take your mark off. Right. Number two, mini Susan, Emma. Or is it none of the above? Which of her children is her favourite? After spending time at Her Majesty's pleasure, Susan was charged with what in 1993? After, right? Was it number one, assault? Number two, receiving stolen goods? Or was it number three, crimes against fashion? Right. So after she was in prison, she was charged with something. What was that? While Susan was in prison, who made a play for Neil? Was it number one, Mo Travis? Number two, Mo Bartley? Or number three, Mo Harborne? So while Susan was in the clink, who made a play
for her, Neil? Was it number one, Mo Travis, number two, Mo Bartley, and number three, Mo Harborn? Susan was approved for what? Was presumed, forget my terrible English, folks. Let me just try and read this. You know what? I've put the answer in the question. There you go. There's no sub editor. There's nobody editing the dribble that I write. So I was going to approve for what position? Sub postmistress was the answer. Let's move on, shall we? Why did Susan have trouble bonding with Christopher after his birth? Number one, she was worried that he was Eddie Grundy's after a one night of passion in the back of the bull. Number two, that Christopher had a hair lip. Or number three, he was very small as he was premature. Why did Susan have a problem bonding with Christopher when he was born? We'll come back to these, folks, so don't worry. But we should go back to our Charlotte. And one of the interesting things about you, yeah, and in lots of ways, right, and I'm not just saying this, right, because you're on Zoom and right, I'm a Super Archers fan and we've spoken a couple of times, but in lots of ways, you're one of the most remarkable of the actors because you have this dual life, don't you? That you are a proper doctor, you know, mm-hmm, but, you know, so how did all that come about? Because I just, you know, the normal actor trajectory is somebody comes from a bit of a thespy family or an arty family. They go off to, they do some kind of stage school and that's the plan they furrow, so to speak. But you took a different path. So why have you had this other professional career?
Yeah, I mean, I'd always wanted to be an actor from the age of, I don't know, 3-4. I mean, I was trained as a dancer in ballet, tap, modern and whatever, and then started acting when I left school, doing theatre and bits of television and whatever. And then got The Archers and was in that. And, you know, after years and years of doing that, sometime in the 80s, I thought, actually, do you know, I love doing The Archers, but once you become a regular in the programme, and a lot of actors will tell you the same thing, that you sort of become a bit typecast in that kind of role. I wasn't getting as much other work as I had been prior to that. And I've always been interested in psychology, and I think all actors are interested in people. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, do you know what? I'm in between acting, in between doing my acting, I'll just go and study a bit of psychology. And so I ended up doing some A-levels in psychology and then did one in sociology and thought, oh, actually, I quite like this. And then one thing led to the other. I thought, actually, do you know, why don't I do a degree in psychology? So I ended up doing the degree. And this was all at the same time as doing the acting. And a lot of the actors will tell you, you know, I used to go in with textbooks and sit in the green room in between scenes, you know, reading up on psychology and whatever. And then one thing led to another. And I finished my degree and thought, I really love this. I love it as much as acting. I had the opportunity to do a PhD, and so did the PhD. And then once I'd done a PhD, I started doing some research, and it just continued from there. So it's sort of, I haven't pursued it necessarily, but options have opened for me on the way, which I've just accepted and taken. And I do love what I do. You know, I work in youth mental health, and it's a really important area. And we do lots of important research. I'm currently working on something which has been trialled in Australia, and we're going to be trialling an online parenting intervention for the parents of young people with depression and anxiety. So I'm really excited about that. So that's great. And as I say, I love them both. I love acting and I love psychology with both of the passion. Although I think if you ask me if I had to choose one, I would choose acting because that's my first passion. That's my love. And I'd love to do some more now. The older I'm getting, the more I'm thinking, God, you know, I'd love to get back out into the theatres again and do some stuff. So I'm thinking perhaps when I, you know, retire from psychology, I'll probably pursue that again, if there are any parts left for the older lady. But I love them both with a passion, but acting has always been my first love. But yeah, that's how it happened. It just was an opportunity to keep my brain turning over whilst I wasn't acting, and then, as I say, opportunities opened, which I just thought, oh, do you know, I'll have a go at that, because that's the kind of person I am. I am quite a I'll have a go at things, and it's just turned out very well.
So, you know, it's obviously a truism that actors are interested in people. I think actors are also interested in self-analysis as well, but they're definitely social observers, because you have to be able to don different roles, be different personas. But you're a psychologist you've got two professional lenses to look at humanity on and to analyze it. Tell us one thing or two things. Tell us a few things about Susan and her psyche, which aren't necessarily readily obvious to the casual person.
Yeah. Well, I think primarily Susan is a very insecure person. And I think, as I said earlier, I think that comes from being raised in a family that was a bit chaotic. And I don't think there was much stability there. And I think that has played a role in how Susan sees herself. So I think she has this, you know, deep down insecurity about who she is and how good she is as a person. Because I have the feeling that she was probably told that she wasn't very, very good or very useful, and was only useful to do the housework or help her mum with the cooking or something like that. That's the picture I've got in my head. So knowing that, you know, we're all kind of products of our childhood and our upbringing, then I think that's probably true to say that's Susan. She has this deep insecurity. And so in order to kind of deal with that insecurity, as I said earlier, you know, she found Neil and she found some stability, and she found someone who believed in her and helped her understand her potential. And I think what's happened there is, rather than just take the advice and use it wisely, I think what Susan's done has kind of leapt to the other extreme and actually has gone a bit overboard in terms of who she thinks she is and what she can do. And I think that's reflected in, you know, the way she's terribly keen to kind of be an upper class person and be related to the older years and all that. And I think we can see that in a lot of people who try to kind of almost deny their roots in some way and change people's perceptions of who they are. So I think those things are right. But I also think she's got quite a deep affection for Neil in terms of admiring his calmness and his ability to cope with situations, which I don't think Susan would be able to do had he not been around. So I think she really needs him to kind of level her and keep her steady. Because I think if she hadn't got that security around her, I'm unsure as to where she would have ended up, to be honest. Oh, what? My God, that sounds really dark.
No.
But that's how I see her in terms of her psyche. That she could have gone one way or another, and it was just happenstance that she happened to be with Neil, and Neil's helped support her and keep her sane, I think.
In my intro, I did mention, you know, the aspirational nature of our Susan, and you mentioned the Aldridges, and I know that one of your kind of favorite aspects of the character has been a social climbing or aspirations. You know, Chris married an Aldridge, so you're practically an Aldridge too. And some of the best scenes are when you're with Brian and Jennifer, you and Neil, and you're having dinner.
Lovely scenes. I listened to one of the archive episodes of Chris and oh, what's her name? I've forgotten her daughter-in-law's name. What's her name? Chris and Alice. Mm-hmm. When they went off to Las Vegas to get married. And it was played in the week. I don't know whether everybody listened to it.
Yes.
The wonderful, I'd forgotten what a great episode that was. And it just had the real kind of chalk and cheese nature of the two families being brought together by Chris and Alice. And the two different reactions and the two different, the whole extent of the differences between the Aldridges and the Carters, and Jennifer's absolute horror at being suddenly related to a horror bin, but Susan's joy of being related to an Aldridge. And I love those. I mean, I've done some lovely scenes with Jennifer. I really, really like working with her. She's great. And it's a great thing to play, you know, with one another. We have quite a laugh in studio with that.
I think it's an apt time for us to have some listener, or sorry, not listener, your viewer questions, because you're all watching now, aren't you? So if you've got a question, wave at your webcam and I will try and get to you. There are a lot of us. Okay, so Steve Thomas, you're on, sir. Go.
Hello. Hi. I mean, Royfield's already touched on this, but before we got onto it, I was just wondering, obviously when you're not being Susan, you're being a mental health professional in the NHS. And as somebody who also works for a mental health trust, but in a non-clinical role, I think I've spotted that there are some quite notable mental health morbidities in Ambridge. Who do you think would make the most interesting case study?
Oh God, what a question. Gosh. I think it would be Shula.
I agree. I think you're right.
I think Shula has got a lot of things going on in that head of hers. I think she's a very confused young woman. And I'd love a storyline where Shula actually decided she was going to go and have some psychotherapy. Because it would be great, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be a great kind of lockdown episodes, wouldn't it? Shula's counselling sessions. But I do think she would be an interesting one, because if you think about her history and who she was as a young woman, and you know the reputation that she had as a young woman for a while, you know, why was she doing that? Her relationships with her ex-husbands, and you know all those kinds of things, and the way she treated Alistair, which I was appalled at. I think probably Shula for me.
Thank you.
Great question.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Christopher, I can't see you. I can see you're waving. Right, Christopher, we're not going to forget you, sir, but I'm going to go to Mia Fox, who I can actually see waving right now. Mia, you're up.
Hi there, Charlotte.
Hi.
Thanks, first of all, for joining us on Dumpty Dum this evening. I would love to ask you a question relating to Chili Con Carne, but I won't. What I really would like to ask you as an actor what you did as an actor when you went from Felicity to Emerald.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. That's a good question, because that's happened only a handful of times in the programme. When Felicity played Emma, she was very young, and we saw her come into the programme when she was about 15 or 16, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So she was very new to the programme, and she was learning all the time. But she was like a sponge. I mean, she was fantastic to work with. And then, of course, you know, Felicity's career. I mean, most of you know that Felicity Jones is now this big superstar in America, and you know, well deserved that is. But when she left, there were some discussion, you know, about whether she would be replaced or what would happen. And thankfully, they did replace her. And when Emerald came in, it was. So smooth, and I'm not just saying that, it was incredibly smooth. She's a very similar actress in terms of openness and willingness to take direction and be directed, and she's settled into the role very, very easily. And for us as her parents, it was very smooth. You know, we when anything like that happens, it's very difficult, because it's happened with both my children. It's happened with Emma and Christopher. Yes. And in both circumstances, when we're auditioning for the new actor, they will often get me in to do the audition with the applicants, so that I can get a feel for whether the actor would work, you know, whether I could work with them, you know, and all that stuff. And in both cases, they've been great transitions. So we've been very, very lucky with both of them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Mia. One of the kind of interesting things for me is when I spoke to Emerald last week, or was it the week before?
Yeah.
Charlotte, and she said, you know, I studied Felicity's accent, and so I had to spend time aping that, but then, and also remembering that this is Susan's daughter, so she has, mm-hmm. so I have to sound like Susan, but yeah. not exactly mimic Susan. So utterly fascinating.
And she's done a sterling job of that, hasn't she? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I can really hear Susan in little bits of what she says. She's a great actress.
Christopher Corbett, you're up next, sir. Right, your hand was there up. Okay, so I'm going on to the gallery view. So if you've got a question, wave. Okay, Mandy Belshaw, Red Agnes, you're up. There you go.
I was just gonna say, I've busted the anonymity there, haven't I, by being Mandy
Belshaw? I'm afraid you have. Yes.
I love your hat. Great hat.
There's a dog.
And cat.
Why did I say dog? It's the cat. I was going to ask you what dress size you were, but not as you, but as you. I always think she's massive.
What dress size Susan is?
Yeah.
I think Susan's probably about a 14.
Only a 14?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think, is Clary about a 22?
Right, Clary's bigger. Clary's bigger. She's a big lass.
She's a big girl.
Eddie likes the big girl.
Yeah. So you've not eaten as many of the
pies,
ice cream, have you, and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, let me down. You know, I find it so fascinating when I look at comments on Twitter and whatever about you know what people think that the characters look like, and I find it absolutely fascinating, the pictures of the characters that you've all got in your heads. Because I don't play Susan as a fattish person necessarily. I don't actually think about her size. You just think about what's going up in there. But then when I look at the comments from listeners and so forth, it's fascinating, because I suddenly think, oh my God, that's how she's coming over. That's, you know, that's great. So it kind of adds to how we interpret the character as well. So it's great.
But I think that what this goes to illustrate for me is there's 5 million listeners weekly to The Archers. There's 5 million Susans and Clarys and Bryans.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own version, don't they? Because I see Clary as bigger than Susan, but I don't see Susan as being big at all. Like, I don't. So, but that's just me, you know. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong. Anybody else got a question? I can see Sarah Bear's there doing her knitting there, thinking that, yeah, I'm looking at you. There you go. Francesca, word salad, you're up.
Hello.
Okay. Hi.
Hiya. I'm an actor as well, and I really, 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 really want a part of the Archers. So, have you got any tips on how to get in?
I think you probably have. Have you done lots of show reels of your voice? Because what I tell a lot of young actors when they ask about radio work, particularly, is how very different it is to telly and theatre, obviously, because you haven't got an audience there, but you haven't got visuals. And you know, one of the things I found when I first went into the program, I hadn't done any radio at all when I first went in, you know, well, it was really a real steep learning curve, I think, for me as a young actor to understand the subtleties and the difficulties of just using your voice. And also being very careful because, you know, your tendency would think, okay, well, I've got to use my voice for everything. So you make your voice go up and down and all over the place. But actually, if it's subtle, you've got to kind of get that fine balance between being just a kind of normal use of voice, but also make it interesting to continue for listeners to want to keep listening to it. So it's a fine line, really. But yeah, I mean, I'd make lots of audio tapes and just get them out there, you know. I mean, that's my best advice. But I would say that radio is an absolute delight. And I would say that, wouldn't I, because I've been in it for such a long time. But it's a joy to do. And you also, as an actor, you get the chance to play characters that you would never be cast as on telly or in theatre. So, you know, for me, coming from drama school, where we, you know, we would dress up in as old women and do lots of really elaborate stage makeup, which is why I went into acting in the first place, because it's such fun. You get to do that kind of thing on radio. You know, you can really push yourself to extremes. But best of luck with your acting career.
Thank you. I really want to do it so I don't have to do my hair. So crazy hair. Thank you.
Okay.
Christopher Corbett, have you got your question ready, sir?
Oh, my God. No, Phil, I've just... discovered how to use look, Zoom, sorry. So, no, I haven't. I saw Charlotte at the Dumpty Dum live, not this year, last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very impressed, yes, yeah.
And you were totally enchanted with her, and you thought, I'm not going to miss a Zoom chat with her. You all smooth, yes, well, yeah. Christopher, you're a smooth operator. I like your moves, sir.
Which you thought, yes.
Does anybody else have a question? We've got about 10 minutes left. I'm going on to gallery view. Wave. Oh, it's really nice to see Drew from Hamilton over there in Tokyo. Who else do I reckon? Oh, there's Philippa, my new best friend. I saw you earlier, Philippa. Of course, it's Lisa de Brule there. Okay, all right. Ads. Now, we met, didn't we, at the last Dumpty Dum? And I must admit, sir, I didn't recognize you, Ads, last week, because you've got a beard. But Ads, this is your question. Go for it, sir.
I've always had this beard for a very, very long time. Yeah, we meet. Hello, everybody. Now,
are you in the jungle?
Well, kind of. My room is very messy, so I decided to put some blades of grass behind
it. Okay.
So this is a really important question, and I think everybody wants to know the answer. What is a special ingredient in the chili?
I'm sorry. If I told you that, I'd have to kill you.
Bam. I really need to know. Royfield, find out.
Passed down through generations of Horribins, that has. I don't know what that says about you. Oh, and there we are. There we have a pot. Who knows? Neil obviously likes it a lot, the chili.
I think Susan's partial to a bit of chili too. She likes it pretty hot, I reckon, as well.
Yeah,
Indeed, indeed.
All right, folks, I think we got time for two more questions. So, Wave, okay, going over to Claire from Clapham. And if you're not in Clapham, I'll be disappointed. Where are you, Claire?
Of course I'm in Clapham. Yay. I'm in lockdown. Where else would I be?
Exactly. So, fire away your question, Claire.
Okay, it's not the most exciting question, but I have spent a large part of my bank holiday today doing some research for an update to my 2018 academic archers paper.
Okay.
And that was the one when you were there at the British Library, actually, I remember it.
Oh, yeah, that was lovely, wasn't it?
So I have got various different old sources of books on the archers. And my question is, in 1984, when Neil and Susan moved into one, the Green.
The Green, yeah.
Was it a council house then and then they bought it, or did they buy it when they moved in?
No, it was a council house and then they bought it.
Okay, because there's differing opinions in various books, but that's what I thought. Well, do you know when they bought it?
No, but I remember because they wouldn't have been able to afford to buy it initially, so I'm almost certain it was a council house first, then they bought it, and then they had a new front door.
Right.
I think that's how it went.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Not very exciting for everybody else, but it's really helped me today because that saved me a lot of time.
Well, but that's actually a really important plot point in the story of Susan and Neil, specifically more Susan than Neil, because, this was the time where people could buy their own council houses for the first time, wasn't it? So this is a bit of evidence to show that Susan wanted to elevate herself and just being a Horobin. So yeah. It's actually really quite key.
Yeah, oh, definitely, definitely. I think that was the first step up, yes. I think. You know, we stood, oh, my goodness, I own my house. And, of course, then when they ended up building their own was, you know, wow, incredible, incredible.
All right, we've got time for one more question. All right, Pat, coming over to you. And I know that you're in Cleveland, Ohio, the town of my favorite American football team. Hello, Pat.
Hello, I'm so glad to talk to you. Thank you for being here. My question is more about what's about to happen under pandemic recording. Have you personally, as an actor, started doing any recording under the new system? And may we expect to hear you then? Are you recording from home? How are you doing it? Maybe you can't say, but whatever you
can. No, Pat, that's a great question. And of course, you know, when lockdown happened, there were lots of discussion at the Archers about, oh gosh, what do we do? Can we keep the programme on air? Is it possible? And I went in and recorded a couple of episodes in March or the beginning of March. And then, of course, lockdown happened. And they said, okay, we've cancelled the episodes for next week that you were supposed to be in. So we were all kind of thinking, what's going to happen? But what has happened is that a selection of actors at the moment have been sent recording equipment so that they can record at home. So that's what we're doing currently. In fact, I was doing it yesterday. There are a few of us at the moment, and we've all been recording for the past couple of weeks at home, episodes that were due to be broadcast on the 25th of May. So up until that period, we'll be just broadcasting some archive episodes while we're editing them, because I think the whole process of recording at home and recording remotely has been much more difficult than we expected, and has taken a lot more editing and stuff like that. So it's just taken a little bit longer, but they will be broadcast from the 25th of May. And if you would like to see my little home studio, I will show you. Hey, come with me. So if you have a look here, I'll pop the light on. And if I turn it round there, so I've got a big duvet there. Can you see? And I sit on my little chair here. There's some scripts there. And there's my recording kit. So you can see the microphone and everything there.
Wow.
So I sit in this little chair here and try and find Susan. which was for me one of my biggest worries, because when they approached me and said, you know, are you happy to try and record from home, I thought, yeah, that's great, because it'll be fantastic for the program to continue broadcasting during this lockdown. Of course, you know, all of us actors, in order to find our characters, we need to bounce off our other, you know, our partners in the program, other actors, other people in the village. And suddenly to have to find your character in isolation, in the corner of your landing or wherever we've set up studios, is quite a challenge. But I think listeners, you will all be very, very pleased with what we've been doing, and we hope you know are grateful and thankful and still enjoy everything that we're doing over the next few weeks. And we're just glad to be able to carry on broadcasting, really.
I must admit, I was somewhat shocked and stunned that somebody had the foresight, basically, at the Beeb, actually to send out the equipment and to figure it all out. You know, it shows that, you know, there was the great will on high to keep the whole kind of thing going.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, we should quickly go on to our quiz, because I know that you, Dr. Charlotte Martin, have aced this. I'm under no illusions that you've got all of these questions right, but let's go and see how everybody else has actually done, shall we? So let's go back and let's go. Here we go. So what do we see here, folks? There's a pop star, and his name is, well, we all know who that is. But what do we have over on the right? We have a green shirt and a D. This is Ed Grundy. Ed Grundy. All right, so the green shirt, and the D there is German, so it's Grun. German for green is Grun. Ed Grundy. So if you got that, big ups to you. Well done.
Did you think up these questions all on your own, Roy?
I did, with my very own brain for thinking. I thought.
Very impressed.
All right, so what do we have here, top left? It's curd. What do we have bottom left? It's a sty. And what do we have over on the right? It's a bottle of gin, but it actually says Miller's gin. Curd, sty, Miller. Kirsty Miller. Did anybody get that? Okay. I must admit, I thought that was quite clever myself. Anyway, the next one, if you know your Sesame Street, this is so easy. Bert and Ernie. This is Bert. It's a fry up. Bert Fry. I gave that to everybody. That's Bert Fry. Okay, now we go on to our Susan Carter round. Which one of Susan's children is her favourite? What do you reckon?
Controversial. Well, I think she has a bit of a soft spot for Chris, personally.
Absolutely. It's Chris, because he married into the Aldridges, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he's done
very well.
All the difficult beginnings, I think she's got a very big soft spot for him. He's doing all the right things as far as she's concerned.
Absolutely. Chris Burley Blacksmith Carter is the correct answer. After spending a night at Her Majesty's pleasure, Susan was charged with what in 1993? Can you remember, Charlotte?
Do you know, I can't. my feeling would be receiving stolen goods, but I don't know. I think it was probably receiving stolen goods.
It was assault. You had a tussle with Mo. When you found out what Mo had done with your Neil, you gave a what for?
Did I? Do you know, I've forgotten that. Oh, you see, I've blanked that. I've pushed it to the back of my head. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, thanks for reminding me about that, Royford.
Well, listen, it's fine. And I must admit, I threw in the crimes against fashion, because we know that you like to dress. So that was a little bit of an in-joke there. Next question. While Susan was in prison, who made a play for Neil? Now, we know her name's Mo, and you said this when you were chatting. But was it Mo Travis, Mo Bartley, or Mo Harborne? What do you reckon, Charlotte?
It's Mo Travis, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And Bartley and Harborne, another little Birmingham insider joke, because you live in Harborne, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and Bartley Green, where my auntie lives, is right next door.
Oh,
that's the reason why. So those are areas in Birmingham. Now, the next one is me not reading what I've written, and I put the answer in the question, so let's move on from that. Yeah. And the last question, and we actually know the answer to this because Charlotte has just said, but what, well, she said previously in the show, why did Susan have trouble bonding with Chris after his birth? Number one, was she worried that he was Eddie Grundy's kid? Did he have a hair lip, or was he very small because he was premature? And the answer is...
he had a hair lip.
Hey. Now, if I go on to, if I stop sharing that and go back, I'm going to go on to gallery view. Did anybody get all of those right? No? Why are you all shaking your heads? Well, those were easy. Okay. How about with the pitch around? Oh, wait a minute, Gemma Parks. Whoa, look at you. Props to you, Mrs.
I got those all right. I used to live in Moseley, so the Hawthorn and Partly Green. Yeah, I'm from Stourbridge, but live in London now. So,
And you got the pitch around ones as well, did you?
Yes.
Oh, well done. Very good.
Wow. Well, there you go, folks. Gemma is utterly a genius. Charlotte is an amazing actor. I'm going to unmute you all so you can all give our Charlotte Martin, aka Susan Carter, a massive round of applause. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Well done, Charlotte.
Namaste.
Thank you for inviting me on. It's been lots of fun, and it's been really nice to see so many of you. And what I would like to say is I hope you're all keeping safe and well, and let's fingers crossed that this will come to an end very soon. But sending love to you all from Ambridge.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being part of Dum Dee Dum Goes to Bed.
Yes, thank you, Roy Field.
Thank you, everybody, for being part of Dum Dee Dum Does Zoom yet again. Oh, we have some breaking Dum Dee Dum news. Dum Dee Dum Does Zoom has been once a fortnight, but I spoke to Michael Lumsden, who plays Alistair the Vet, and he will be coming on next Friday. So this time next week, we'll have Alistair the Vet on, and then after that, then we have Kerry, then I think we have Angela Barnes, then after that, we have Anya, who played Lexi. So we have lots of Zoom content to keep all right royally entertained on the, you know, the one day of the week when we don't have any archers, which is a Friday. So there you go. That's me done. Charlotte, thank you again for coming on. Take care, everybody. And as Charlotte said, stay safe. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.